What is up, and welcome back to another episode of the Wizards Podcast. I'm your host, Greg Finberg, and today's episode, we're going to be touching on a lot of things. There's new reporting about Washington's preferences in the draft, about trade rumors and stuff like that I'm going to touch on in the beginning of the pod. Then we're going to move into some mailbag questions. I asked you guys on Twitter to give me your most pressing Wizards offseason NBA draft free agency related questions, and you guys responded very well, so appreciate anybody that put a question. They're going to try to get through all of those throughout this episode, and then also ending it with some additional stuff regarding Wizards pre-draft workouts and kind of some of the stuff that's been compiled on it as well. So without further ado, I want to jump right into some of the latest reporting as it stands with the Wizards. The Steinline Substack reported about a week ago, I think, the Wizards' interest in trading up possibly for VJ Edgecombe, somebody that Washington is reportedly, you know, coveted and likes in that range at number three or four, wherever they trade up for him. Apparently, that's who Charlotte really wants at four. They might be willing to trade back, reports indicate, if he's not there and Philly takes him. So again, I doubt he'll fall past them if reports are correct. But if the Wizards want him, they trade up to three to get him, it's going to take a haul, and I doubt that happens. But there's definitely reported interest between the Wizards when it comes to VJ Edgecombe. As we mentioned last week, Rafael Barlow reported that Jordan Poole could be dealt on draft night or later this offseason. My guy Matt Moderno and I touched on that in depth in my latest episode, so if you want more on that, be sure to check that out. But just want to keep everyone posted in case you missed that episode, that's some reporting out there. Orlando was a big possibility in terms of a possible trade candidate for Poole. That's not going to happen after the Bane trade, which we'll touch on in a second here, but you know, just wanted to make sure everybody's on the same page that there has been multiple reports, especially Rafael's, that Poole could be dealt at some point this offseason. Brett Siegel of Clutch Points, multiple reports involving the Wizards. The first is that the Wizards, quote, have not, end quote, shopped Corey Kispert in trade talks. He mentioned that he's not saying that they aren't open to dealing Kispert and won't be willing to listen to trade talks revolving around Kispert, but Brett mentioned that the Wizards adamantly, he said, have not shopped Corey Kispert. That was, you know, contradicting report from Evan Sidery, who, by the way, I've touched on him before on this channel, is an aggregator. He has no sources whatsoever. He just spews nonsense. So Brett was just basically saying, yeah, this guy has no idea what he's talking about, because Evan said the Wizards had shopped Corey Kispert, and Brett said it's not true in the slightest. So I wanted to make sure, Wizards fans, if you did read Evan's post, I'm blocked by Evan, and that's fine by me, but I can still see his post somehow, and I know he posted that. So in case you know, read that misinformation, Brett kind of came in there and said that was untrue. He also mentioned his reporting. It was in Clutch Points mock draft. They have Derek Queen going 13th, and he reported that should Queen fall to this range, which, you know, has, you know, lately picked up steam considering he didn't have the best testing at the combine. I don't know what he's doing in pre-draft workouts, but I haven't heard much buzz there. But if he does fall to that range, Brett reported that, or Clutch Points reported that, the Wizards would have interest in moving back up. They have the 18th pick, obviously, and they have some other veterans like Marcus Smart and Corey Kispert that they could, you know, possibly send in a trade package to one of those late lottery teams like Atlanta that's picking there, the Spurs at 14 that are picking there, and maybe see if what they can do there. Take back a bad contract, they have the cap space. But there is definitely reported interest in the Wizards. Maybe not at six with Queen, but if he's, you know, someone that falls to the late lottery, they have the assets to certainly move up and take him there. And the last thing is Matt Moore of Action Network. He put out on an article, or I guess it was in a Substack, that the Wizards want to deal Marcus Smart to a contender, like in an ideal world. But there's just minimal interest right now. Like, I touched on this a couple episodes ago as well with my Marcus Smart, Chris Middleton, you know, and where they stand with their trade value. You know, Smart's got a $20 million expiring contract after this season. It's not the greatest, and it's hard to move. Like you saw with Malcolm Brogdon, who played fairly well when he was not injured for the Wizards last year. He, too, had an expiring $20 million contract, yet the Wizards had no success moving him, shopping him, whatever they wanted to do, because they held on to him throughout the deadline. So I think Smart could be another player that they just can't find value for on the contract he's at, unless they're taking back, you know, bad salary, maybe multiple years of bad salary in order to pick up, you know, some sort of value for Brogdon, or sorry, for Smart. I think it's going to be a lot more difficult to come through with a trade there. But that's just kind of the latest reporting. Wanted to get that here early and often on this pod to make sure you guys are up to date with kind of what's going on with the Wiz. By the time I'm recording this, it'll be posted on the 17th. So that means 8 days until the June 25th NBA draft. Reminder, it's 2 days. Last year was the first year of it. But round one will be on the 25th. Round two will be on the 26th. The Wizards currently own the 6th and 18th selections in the first round and the 40th selection in the second round. A lot could change near the draft. You still have the KD trade that apparently is close, and there's so many different people who are, you know, tapped in and have sources and stuff that I just, you know, don't buy unless it's someone like Shams or Mark Stein or something like that. But certainly that's a move that everyone's anticipating. But the next big thing is the draft. It's fairly close away, 8 days by the time this is posted. So, you know, be on the lookout, obviously, for that as well. But with that out of the way and the reporting out of the way, I want to touch on real quick the Bane trade. And I'm not going to talk about it, how it affects the Grizzlies or the Magic. Like, you guys that are listening are Wizards fans. Like, you want to know how it affects the Wizards. And you're probably sitting back and saying, how does a Grizzlies Magic trade affect the Washington Wizards at all? The effect that it has is the 2026 Phoenix first round pick that Orlando originally owned and sent to Memphis as part of that trade package, unprotected at that. But that was concerning for Wizards fans, basically saying, well, Washington has a 2026 pick swap with the Phoenix Suns. So how does that work if their pick was just traded from Orlando to Memphis? Like, do the Wizards not own the ability to swap anymore? I'm here to save the day. And if you are one of those concerned Wizards fans, fear not, because the Wizards still have full ability to utilize that pick swap should they wish. Now, a couple of things have to align for that to happen, right? This is for 2026, as you know, as well. So next year, Washington owns its own first-round pick, but it's top eight protected. So if their pick falls within the top eight after the lottery, they retain that selection. If not, it goes to the New York Knicks. I assume, based on reporting, and Josh Robbins touched on this the other day, like, it just makes sense for the Wizards to bottom out. You know, a bottom four record guarantees they can't fall past eight, and they retain that pick. Apparently, this is one of the best draft classes in the last 10 to 20 years. I would assume the Wizards would like to, you know, hold on to that pick. So I don't think it'll be too much of a concern of it not getting, you know, not the Wizards not holding on to their own selection. So that has to happen first for them to even be able to utilize a pick swap, because if they don't have their own pick, then they can't use the pick swap. It becomes void pretty much. But let's say that the Wizards are top eight. If the Phoenix Suns are picking ahead of them, like, let's say the Suns miss the playoffs, they get lucky in the lottery, they're picking at number two, the Wizards can swap. They still have that ability to say, hey, I want the second pick, and then Phoenix would therefore move back to the number eight pick. And in that case, the number eight selection would be given to the Memphis Grizzlies because they own Phoenix's pick. They get the second most favorable, Memphis does, of Washington and Phoenix pretty much, because if Washington owns its own pick, it's going to take the Phoenix pick if it's a better selection. So the Wizards can still swap. Nothing changes based on this trade. The only, you know, the only difference is instead of the Phoenix pick being conveyed to Orlando, it's being conveyed to Memphis. Whether that's, you know, if Washington utilizes the swap or not, it has no effect on the Wizards. It's just wherever Orlando would have been picking via Phoenix, it's now Memphis picking via Phoenix. So hopefully that clears it up. Essentially, the Wizards get the best of the Phoenix / Washington pick, whatever they want, if they're a top eight, and the Grizzlies get the second best of that. That's the easiest way that I can explain it. Hopefully that makes sense. But it's kind of business as usual with that pick swap. Nothing really changes. It's just a different team factored in where Phoenix would be. So hopefully that clears the air with the Bane trade. It's a lot of first round picks. And for all you guys that were coming at me about Jordan Poole and saying that there's no way that the Wizards could get two first round picks, like, contending teams that want to make a leap, they're willing to pay for these types of players. And it's no longer that you need to, you're only spending four first round picks if it's a, you know, generational player that could be your first or second option. If a guy works for your team and it helps you contend, you're willing to part with those picks. And that's what I've been harping on with a pool trade. Like, I don't think the Wizards should get two ones, but it's a possibility, and it's definitely where they should start trade talks. And Jordan Poole isn't better than Desmond Bane. You know, he's not even close to the defender Desmond Bane is, but it's just, you know, reassuring for me, at least, somebody that's been preaching the value of a guy like Poole, that the Wizards would, if there were trade talks, start with two first-round picks, and that is not a delusional place to start negotiations. With that stuff said, we already talked about some of the reports and talked about how the Bane trade affects the Wizards pick swap. We can move on to some mailbag questions. And if you asked a question, thank you for doing that. It makes my job certainly easier that I'm able to pick and choose some of the best questions that you guys had. And I try to pick everyone's question to get this all into to one pod. We're going to start with at Wiz Mikey on Twitter. He said, "Really, what are your realistic expectations for the Wizards' second and third year players entering 25-26? So this would be the two draft classes under Will Dawkins, Bilal Coulibaly and Tristan Vukcevic from the first one, and then you got obviously Sar, Carrington, and George from last year's class. I'm going to start at the top with Bilal. I think realistically, you like a respectable three ball. Like no one anticipates Bilal being a knockdown 3-point shooter in the near future. Maybe not even in his career, but he's got to be respectable from that range, because you saw last year, his explosion, his first step is quick. And that's very good when people are out on the perimeter and they're respecting your shot. But if you are a bad 3-point shooter, like we saw last year, they were just sitting in the paint. They were daring him to shoot the three. Sometimes he'd make it. Sometimes he would make none. But if it's not respectable, it's, you know, it hurts him. His game opens up so much more with a respectable outside jumper. So I think that's what he needs to add. Hopefully like 35%+. I don't think that's too much to ask. He needs to be able to grow as a shot creator as well. I think we saw that last year. I mean, he had double digit assists a couple times, that triple double against Brooklyn, where he was creating for others, creating his own shot. I'd like to see a little bit more of that. So mainly offensive growth when it comes to a guy like Bilal Coulibaly. The defense is there. I think, you know, you've seen him foul a lot less over last year compared to his rookie year. So I'm not concerned about anything defensively, but offensive ascension definitely needs to be there, especially from outside in the three-point line in year three for Bilal. When it comes to Vukcevic, like, defense getting stronger, it's pretty self-explanatory. He has a good touch. The shot looked great last year in the minutes he played for the Wizards. So I'm not really concerned about his offensive game. What I am concerned about is him adding some size to bang with bigger dudes down low, and also being a smarter, better defender, being in the right spots, because, you know, he was a liability on that end for the better part of his minutes last year, and that's not something the Wizards, you know, realistically want when trying to build a roster filled of guys that can play both sides of the ball. So definitely that for those guys. When it comes to the rookies from last year, you got Alex Sarr, who I think a better 3-point shot is certainly in the cards. Like 32% last year wasn't great, but considering how poorly he started, I think you started to see him figure it out from outside. So more efficient from 3-point range for Sarr, certainly. Stronger interior defense, stronger offensive game in the post. Those are some of the things I'm looking for, because realistically, you get the ball down low, he'd take a couple of dribbles, and if it wasn't there, he'd pass it out. He needs to be more aggressive and more assertive there. Look for, you know, a little jump hook or looking for more contact, because it was rare. Like, I remember a point last year where I was asked if Alex Sarr is a good free throw shooter, and I didn't know, because he barely gets to the line for somebody that's 7 foot. So he needs to be more aggressive, driving to the lane and posting up, but he also has to get better on the interior defensively, because there was a lot of games where he'd get bullied inside, especially on the glass. And at 7 foot, he needs to play more like a 7-footer and not like a, you know, a stretch 3 or 4 that you know, really has nothing else to his game. When it comes to Bub, more consistent outside jumper, you know, 32% from three isn't tremendous from a guard. And then again, I'm not too concerned with the percentages, because he was really good for mid-range. I'd like to see him take more of those, as kind of, you know, putting his game more so in the mid-range spot. More drives. I didn't think he drove to the lane. He didn't put too much pressure on the rim. I'd like to see him do more of that. I'd also see some more lead guard abilities. You know, if there are minutes with just Bub at point guard and not Poole at point guard, I'd like to see what Bub can do as a creator for others, because when Poole didn't play, I was, you know, intrigued to see what Bub can do in that role. Keyshawn George, two-way progression. You hopefully, you know, that continues for a guy like like George, consistent three ball, something that he needs to definitely work on, getting it to the 36, 37, 38% percentage. Can he be a shot creator? That's something I'm looking for. So more so on offense, I really have no concerns with George. He showed no fear on defense. He consistently took on, you know, the toughest assignment, especially when Bilal went down, locked up his opponent most of the time. And so I'm not concerned about that. And just more so offense, being a more respectable three-point shooter is something that I'm looking for Keyshawn. And then AJ Johnson, you know, he's got to get a lot stronger. I mentioned this on the Locked On Wizards podcast that I was on the other day. There's no reason that me at 5'9 should weigh the same as 6'5 AJ Johnson. Like he's got to add strength and weight in order to really enhance his game, especially on the defensive end. You know, less turnovers, better handle, respectable three ball. It's all things, you know, that I think he can do as he progresses, but he's 20 years old. He's very raw. He's got a long ways to go. But these are kind of like building blocks. These are little steps on his developmental path. I don't expect him to be, you know, bulking and strong this season. Like I just expect everything to be a little bit better for a guy like Johnson, a smarter player as well. So that's kind of what I'm looking for the growth, realistic growth of those guys. At All22GB asks, how long do the Wizards keep Brian Keefe? Does he stick around if the Wizards start to turn it around? It's a fair question. Brian Keefe entering year, I guess, 2.5, you know, had pretty much half the season until Junior got fired and did a decent job. Record was terrible, but he had the worst roster in the league. Last year, roster wasn't any better. You can definitely say he had a bottom two, bottom three roster in the league. And yet the team improved slightly. I mean, three more wins isn't like anything to you know, go home and talk about. But I thought defensively, you know, there was way more buy-in. I thought everything was better than when it was under Unseld Jr. So if you want to, you know, hang your hat on that, sure. I did think that there were some times that I wasn't a fan of Keefe's rotations. I certainly think that a lot of that has to do with playing older guys to build their trade value. You know, I understand, you know, the rotation is at times out of a guy like Keefe's hands when it's, you know, in the process of rebuilding and trying to build the value of players you want to trade. I certainly understand that. But I think he's done a good job with the cards he's been dealt. I really don't have too many gripes with Keefe. I fear, there are the people that say he's a tank commander, and until the Wizards show that they are behind him through, you know, past the rebuilding phase, then you can't dispel some of those people saying he's a tank commander. I'd say, you know, you got to temper expectations when you have a terrible roster. I think Keefe's done a solid job. So I definitely think throughout this season, you know, it won't be an in-season fire. Like the Wizards expect to be bad. If the players like him and there's no drama, the locker room's fine, development looks good, I think they'll keep him through the year and then they will reassess, you know, is he the guy we want moving forward? And go from there. I certainly, you know, an in-season firing would be shocking to me. Is he the guy for the future? I have no idea. He hasn't shown any reason to believe he's not, but he also obviously hasn't shown any reason to believe he is. So with that being said, I don't know, but definitely think he'll be here throughout the 25-26 season. At Bobo McNabb asks, how much should the Wizards be willing to give up in a move from 18 in back into the lottery? I mentioned this briefly in the beginning with Clutch Points' reporting about if Queen falls, maybe if a guy like Assange or Demon falls to that range and Washington likes them, they would be willing to move back in, certainly for Queen, as Clutch Points reports. And that's kind of the question that I've been asked here. I think it depends how far of a jump. Like if the jump is from 18 to 15 or 16, you obviously have to pay less than if it's back into the lottery for 12, 13, or 14. In that range, and in that back in the lottery, there are some teams that might be willing to make a move back. Obviously, you have a team like San Antonio at 14 that maybe doesn't need to add another young player after taking Harper. Maybe they want, you know, someone that can help them win now. And if they have the cap space, you know, they value a guy like Corey Kispert with his shooting, and the Wizards get back, you know, an expiring contract like Harrison Barnes plus the 14th pick. Maybe, maybe there's a package where, you know, Washington's able to offload a guy like Marcus Smart, plus pick 18 to a contending team in that half a lottery, and they move up a couple spots and take someone. I certainly think it'll include 18. That's pretty obvious. Maybe one of those veteran players like Kispert or Smart potentially in a trade like that. You know, 40 could be involved. I doubt they have to offload a future one just to move up a couple of picks. That doesn't make too much sense to me. But certainly, you know, draft capital will be in play there. You know, they have the 18th pick, like I mentioned. They have 40. The 2026 first-round pick they got from Philly last year, which is the worst of OKC, Houston, and the Clippers. They have the Suns pick swap. They have Kispert. They have Smart. Like, they have assets if they want to make another jump up into this spot and say, you know what, here's 18 to 40 and something else. We want two rookies in this class. We don't want three, but we want to make sure we get two of the top 13, 14 rookies in this class and then move forward with our rebuild. You know, I could certainly see something like that, you know, going forward, but it'll depend how far of a jump it is. My guy, No Breaks and You, he asks, is Jordan Poole the Wizards point guard of the future? St. Marty Nas also asked this similar question as well. And I've talked about this, you know, in depth the last couple episodes, but I want to touch on it again. I think there's two pathways here realistically for the Wizards. Like, you could keep him. You're certainly in no rush to. Like, his contract's fine. You know, $30 million is not the worst contract in the league, considering they just were paying Bradley Beal 2 years ago, you know, $50 million, and it's not like he really brought them, you know, any other playoff success that Poole hasn't. You know, they don't make the playoffs anyway. So I don't think that they're in any rush to trade a guy like Jordan Poole. They can keep him. The young guys certainly like Jordan Poole as a mentor. You've seen that with a guy like Koulibaly. Even some of the younger guys like Sarr and Carrington and George as well all seem to like Jordan Poole. And he's coming off career season. Yeah, averaged 20 points, 5 assists, you know, 38% from three, you know, career highs across pretty much the board, certainly in steals as well. This is a guy that could be the point guard of the future, but he also couldn't be. And I keep mentioning this. If Will Dawkins didn't draft you, I don't care if he even traded for you, you know, I don't view you as a lock to be a part of the future. Certainly for a guy like Poole, who was traded for, that makes him, you know, a little less maybe expendable than someone like Johnny Davis, who Washington's Will Dawkins didn't draft. You know, it was Tommy Shepard draft pick, didn't work out, and he was, you know, shipped out at the deadline in that Smart trade. So I don't think that Jordan Poole's a lock, but I don't think that the Wizards are, you know, in any rush to move off him. It's certainly possible he's the point guard of the future, but you also have Bob Carrington that maybe could, you know, come into that role. If you draft Jeremiah Fears, he's a similar player. Maybe you think he could be your point guard of the future, makes Poole more expendable. But if you draft a guy like Derek Queen, you draft the forward at 18, you still need a lead guard. And you know, you might as well keep Jordan Poole, you know, for this year. Certainly if you get a trade package, right, where you're getting 2-3 first round picks, you cannot decline it. I don't care how much you like Jordan Poole. That's just too good of a package to give up, you know, and to not take. Capitalize on that max value, as we've seen the Wizards do with the likes of Gafford and certainly not Bradley Beal, but got what they could for a guy like Beal. You know, certainly have done that in the past, right? And Danny Avdia last year as well is a perfect example of that. So I certainly don't think the Wizards should be in a rush. And again, I'll mention this, like, I don't think people saying AJ Johnson can slide into that role if they trade Poole are, and I want to be careful here, but I don't think you're being rational. I think you're being optimistic in that AJ Johnson ideally, you know, develops into a lead guard, but I certainly don't think that he's close, honestly, to being a guy that I'm trusting with the ball in his hands. He's way too raw. And when it comes to creation for others, high turnovers, you know, certainly not the greatest passer in the world. Like, there's a long ways to go for a guy like AJ Johnson. So, you know, to consider, you know, trading Jordan Poole just because you want more minutes for AJ Johnson, I think that's, you know, an irrational take. But certainly if the picks are there, go for it. If you're giving me one first round pick and salary filler for Poole, I'd consider it. But my point here is that the Wizards aren't in a place where they have to make a deal. It's not like it's a terrible contract and their cap sheet isn't good. It's not like it's a bad situation internally with the locker room. Like, everything's fine. It's just if they get a good package of 2+ first, you can't not take that. So I guess my answer to the question is, it depends what his value is around the league and kind of going from there. So if you ask me now, yes or no, I would say no. Like, I think realistically he gets dealt at some point this year or next year, or if that contract runs out, they don't want to pay him maybe. But if you had to ask me, it would be a no. And that's not a confident no. It's just if I had to answer it, that's my answer as of now. At Penn Klocka said, which rookie takes the biggest leap in year two? It's tough, and it's a good problem to have, right? When you have four rookies from last year that showed signs of being pretty good NBA players, certainly some more far along than others. I think, you know, a lot of people would expect me to say Alex Saar in this spot. I'm going to go with Bob Carrington. Maybe that's just because I want to be a little bit different, but at the same time, like, this is a guy that came on during the last 10 games of the season. You know, 15.7 assists, 5 boards across the last 10 games. He had a game of 30-plus points in there in which he hit, 7 threes. You know, he showed signs of being a really good guard, especially in a starting role for this team. And I just think that a guy of his caliber who, showed that he could have a lethal mid-range, he was quite good in the mid-range. He needs to get more efficient from outside. But hopefully, playing behind a guy like Middleton, who has the ability to knock down the three ball, but is also a mid-range assassin, that's certainly someone that I'm excited and intrigued about for Bub to be able to play with and learn from and kind of grow behind a guy like Middleton, who's shown that he can do it at the top of the top, winning an NBA's finals for years. And so that's quite intriguing for me with Bub. I think he will start at the two, and if that's alongside Poole, then great. I'm fascinated with his growth throughout the season, and I really think that he could take a step forward. Certainly Saar, if he becomes a knockdown 3-point shooter and the defense is there, he gets stronger. That is something that I could foresee, but I like the production and the overall growth throughout the year that I saw from Bob. Certainly playing all 82 games, that's not easy. Ending it on a high note with that buzzer beater in the clutch against Miami in game 82. I just really like how he ended the season, and I think he can take that into next season and kind of grow from there. At MTGG user asks, who will be the Wizards' number two scoring option next season? I was leaning towards Chris Middleton here because obviously he has the scoring prowess, being a number two behind Giannis all those years in Milwaukee. But I did some math. Middleton took just 9 shots a game for the Wizards in the 14 appearances he had after the deadline. And in those games where Middleton played, Alex Saar actually took the most shots per game at 15. In the 12 games that Saar was in the lineup with Middleton, and Middleton was at 9 a game, like 5th or 6th on the Wizards when he played. Jordan Poole took more shots than him, and certainly others as well. So I didn't see the overall, volume that I would expect from Middleton, and maybe that changes next year. But I would consider Saar, I guess, to be the number two option. And that doesn't mean he's a shot creator. He's certainly not going to be some guy that goes out there and goes and puts on dribble moves and post moves. And I don't foresee that. He's someone that needs others to create for him. But I think if you're looking at a number two option, I think Saar has the volume and the minutes certainly to be a number two scorer behind a guy like Jordan Poole. Bob Carrington, if he decides to be more aggressive offensively, sure. But because Middleton took so little shots for some reason in his minutes, I got to go with Alex Saar there. Not a flashy answer, but that's just kind of based on the stats where I'd go. And if they draft Trey Johnson, maybe he's a very high volume scorer, takes a lot of shots. You never know what trades they make. But if you're asking me right now, I'd probably go with Saar. At DC Sports Nerd asks, thoughts on the Wizards trading Phoenix's 26 pick swap, for the future. I think it has little value for the Wizards. Like, I think the Wizards will be a bottom four team next year because that guarantees that they can't fall outside the top 8, and it guarantees that they are able to keep that selection in the first round next year. What I will say is, I mentioned this in my last pod, that holds a lot more value to other teams. Like, certainly if you make a trade with Philly, that holds more value for a team like Philly than it does for the Wizards. It also depends what the Suns do with Kevin Durant. Like, if they decide to trade him and then they make other moves, if they trade Devin Booker and they're tanking, then you're the Wizards and that's more valuable. But until they trade Devin Booker and they're going to have Bradley Beal, like, I just find no way that they're picking above the Wizards. It's certainly not likely. So it adds more value for a lot of other teams. You don't really see pick swaps get traded too often from team to team in terms of, like, the team that has it trading it to another team. But it's certainly something to think about. At MVP underscore JD5 asks, which team will Corey Kispert play for next season? The easy answer for me here is the Wizards. Like I think they're certainly going to be open to discussing, you know, trades for Kispert. Like Brett Siegel mentioned, they're not going to shop him. So I would expect him to be on the opening night roster unless, you know, reports indicate the other way. You know, if you're looking at possible destinations for him, you just got to look at teams that need a three-point shooter. You know, Philadelphia, if he's included in a trade package there for three, San Antonio, Orlando, Houston definitely needs three-point shooting. Maybe not Orlando now because they added Bane. But Houston, San Antonio, those are teams that ranked in the bottom 10 in terms of three-point shooting last season. They're teams that are ready to contend. They have, you know, draft picks in this year's draft and beyond. So you never know where that could be. But if you had to ask me right now, I'd say that Corey Kispert will be a Wizard next season. At Buy Slices asks, do you see the Wizards being active in free agency this offseason? Not really is the simple answer. You know, in terms of active, I think that means going out and looking at, you know, free agents to come in and really add to boost your roster. I just don't see that happening, especially with the roster they have now. It's pretty full. And if you look at what they did last year, they just made a bunch of low-key signings, you know, signed Sadiq Bey for a really cheap deal, knowing that, you know, it was good value and he wouldn't probably play all year while he was rehabbing his ACL injury. Valanciunas, 3 years, $30 million. That's a steal of a contract. And you basically do that so he can mentor your young center for, you know, half the season. And then you trade him at the deadline for a pair of second-round picks. You know, low-key signings like that. And then in terms of other ones, they signed Gil to a two-year deal with only 1 year guaranteed. Did the same for a guy like Rashawn Holmes, where only 1 year is guaranteed. Re-signed Vucevic to a two-way contract. And that's all they did in terms of signings. Like, they are pretty low-key. And this offseason, the only free agent that they have unrestricted is Brogdon. They'll let him walk. And then Anthony Gill, you know, by the 29th of June, him and Rashawn Holmes, you know, that's the guaranteed date for their contracts. And Holmes is supposed to make way more. I think it's about 12 to 13 million next year. So I doubt the Wizards guarantee that salary. Maybe they bring it back for cheap. And then Anthony Gill, it's only 2.5 million. Like that's a contract worth picking up. He's been a good veteran mentor. If you have the roster space, I think it would be smart to at least take him up on that last year of his deal. See where you're at next year if you want to contend. But I think he's a good locker room guy to have. Everyone seems to like him. But that's kind of where I'm at. You know, maybe they pick up Gill next year. I doubt they do the same for Holmes. And you know, a signing similar to Valanciunas, that was kind of out of left field, and you didn't know the Wizards were going to do it. But they need center depth, right? You know, they have Alex Saar for guys down low, Vucevic as well, but that's a two-way contract. And then they have nobody else. So if they decide to let Holmes walk, you need someone to back Saar up at center. And I certainly don't view Vucevic as someone that they'd be willing to do that for now. He's a two-way guy. So you look at some of the free agent centers and go from there as someone on a cheap deal that hopefully plays well, and you can, you know, trade him at the deadline for a couple of future picks. That's kind of where I'd be looking. You know, more low-key for the Wizards, certainly, as you saw last year. At JulianMC28 asked, considering what happened in the lottery, do you think the Wizards will try to tank next season? I mentioned this before. The top eight protected one, just, you know, it screams, we are going to be bad. You know, if you like it or not, like, it's a really good draft class next year, and Wizards fans are probably getting impatient with the last 2 years winning 33 games, losing 130 games. Like, that's not easy for a fan base, right? But it's kind of that last step of the last year that this team really needs to, I guess, to use a lack of a better term, bottom out. With a good draft class, and if you get a bottom four record, you guarantee you keep your pick. I think that's quite enticing for the Wizards. And so I foresee them, you know, losing a lot again next year. And then hopefully after that, they have the pieces where they can kind of move forward with the rebuild. And the second question, will rotations be better if they don't actively tank? Certainly if they don't, but I think they're going to. And that's why I was, you know, hesitant to put so much of the blame on Brian Keefe, because like the rotations, for as much as we get on him for that, sometimes I don't know how much of that is in his full control. I know certainly that it's, you know, a lot of times the front office is saying, play this guy, don't play this guy, and vice versa. So I don't see the rotations being too much better, because I think they're going to try to tank one more year to ensure that they keep their draft pick. At BG the Pro asks, which Wizards player or players will get moved this offseason? I think you've seen in trade reports, Jordan Poole, Corey Kispert, Marcus Smart, most likely to get traded at the trade deadline, I would say is a guy like Smart, just because it's an expiring salary. A team would only take him on for half the season. And I think if he builds up his value in the minutes, possible minutes he gets with the Wizards, I could see a trade deadline deal happening. Now, if you're asking most likely get traded at the draft, I'd give you Poole and I'd give you Kispert, just because they're more so younger players that I think some you know teams on the rise could trade some picks they have in this year's draft in the middle lottery, late first round, you know, maybe to add them. But certainly, yeah, I don't think Marcus Smart would be a draft night trade. If he does, then I'm just wrong. I've had questions about Middleton, his contract. He's harder to move off, right? $34 million expiring at that, but $34 million is tough to match, especially with your second apron teams, your contending teams that don't have the greatest cap sheets. That's a little tough to work out a deal. And so I can't see a move happening. Maybe a buyout at some point, but again, solid mentor, good veterans, 33 years old. So he's not like a washed up. He's still a solid player, as you saw last year. And maybe Sadiq Bey is someone that, you know, cheap deal, is only making $6 million a year. Someone that was really good in Detroit before he tore his ACL, in Atlanta as well. So, you know, he should be healthy by opening night. And if he plays well in the first part of the season, he's still only 26, I think. So the Wizards trading him would make sense if they're able to get, you know, a future one or you know, a plethora of seconds or someone, you know, that's young and on the move. And they could add him. So I certainly think Sadiq Bey could be an intriguing option. Not many are talking about, but it obviously depends on his on-court play and how he rehabs from that ACL injury. At Matt Jackson, UCF asks, would you trade 6 plus 18 for 3? No, I wouldn't. And maybe you would, and maybe those listening would, because they covet a guy like Trey Johnson or VJ Edgecombe or Ace Bailey like that. But for two reasons, right? I don't covet those guys that much to where I'm willing to move, you know, two top 20 picks to move up just three slots. You know, similarly, I'd rather have more chances at hitting a home run. And it's certainly harder to hit a home run at 18 than it is to hit one at, you know, six or three. But in a good draft class with a lot of holes on this team, I'd like to add two really talented players instead of one really talented player at three that I realistically, I don't value that much higher than I do who I can get at six. And that's just a personal preference, right? Based on my draft evaluations. But you know, the underlying theme here is I want more shots at adding someone, multiple players, sorry, that could have, you know, helped this team going forward instead of just one that could help this team going forward at three. So I would not do that. The final question here I got is from Hawaii Hodel on Twitter. He asked, what's AJ Johnson's upside? I think, you know, an athletic two guard, maybe he can develop into a point guard if he gets smarter with the ball, less turnovers. But you know, decent 3-point shooter that can, you know, drive to the rim, put pressure on the rim offensively. He has the length to be a disruptor on defense, but I just, with the lack of strength and muscle there, I don't foresee him being, you know, too much of a world-class defender. But I do like the skills and stuff he has. He's a tremendously skilled player for his age. It's just a matter of how much work he wants to put in both on the floor and off the court with his body to develop into a really solid NBA player. And so, you know, obviously I think he has a really high ceiling, but I also think he has a pretty low floor. I think, you know, it kind of depends what he does in terms of putting in the work, how the Wizards decide to develop him. But obviously there's upside there, and that's why the Wizards, you know, made sure that if they were going to trade Kuzma to Milwaukee, that AJ Johnson was a part of that trade. And I will say that Doc Rivers mentioned multiple times how reluctant Milwaukee was to move AJ Johnson. They clearly really like him. The Wizards really like him. He showed flashes with some big time in-game dunks and some solid shooting last year. So, you know, I think, you know, while he's been a little bit inconsistent, I do buy the upside, and I think he could be a pretty solid player. Certainly not someone that I'd say you need to trade Jordan Poole to give this guy minutes. Like, he's not there yet. But I think he could develop into, you know, a good piece for this team moving forward. And then the second part of your question is, will Tristan Vukcevic ever get significant minutes? Yes, if he can defend better and make sure that a 3-point shot is consistent, like it was last year. You know, to be fair, he was a good outside shooter last year. But the thing I continue to harp on with Tristan is his defense. He's got to get stronger, obviously, to be able to, you know, body up down low, be able to rebound and clean the glass defensively. But I think he needs to get smarter on defense. He needs to be quicker. He needs to be a better defender for me to consider him a true lock to be a part of this young core moving forward. Certainly, that's ideal, right? That he does develop, you know, on both ends of the floor. But again, the offensive flashes have been shown. He has great touch, great shooting touch on offense. I'm more so concerned on defense. And if he can get that right, then I think the minutes will come. But that's going to do it for the mailbag part. Hopefully you enjoy that. Just wanted to switch it up a little bit and not necessarily throw all draft stuff at you. But I wanted to make sure that, you know, if you had questions about the Wizards offseason, I tried to answer as many as I possibly could. So thank you to anybody who sent in a question. Hopefully I did a good job answering them. If you have more questions than I asked or that I answered, the comment section is always open on here. My DMs are open on Twitter. So feel free to ask me any type of question. I'll respond to that in the comments or on Twitter. In terms of a look ahead, the NBA draft is 8 days away. It's on the 25th. I'm going to have hopefully my NBA draft preview pod, which will feature, you know, my final predictions on the Wizards at 6, 18, and 40, who I would personally take at 6, 18, and 40, potential rumors on trades, the latest reporting, kind of everything you need to know to get you ready for Washington's NBA draft in a couple days. That'll be included on that. That should be uploaded on the 22nd or 23rd of June. Maybe I'll add a guest on. I have no idea. But that's kind of my look ahead. Obviously, we're going to do some stuff for the draft. Now, I could do a pod there, or I could do a Twitter Spaces. I haven't done a Spaces in a while, but I think more people would probably enjoy the Spaces. So, you know, let me know in the comments if you'd like me to do a Twitter Spaces following the first round of the draft. So Wizards fans can come on there and share their thoughts about what how they're feeling with Washington selections, because I already know that a lot of people are going to be really happy and probably a lot of people are going to be pissed based on how polarizing some of these prospects in the number six range and even 18 are. So we'll kind of see, you know, what you guys prefer for me to do there. Let me know if you want Spaces or I can go live on YouTube, whichever one, you know, you guys think is preferable. But that's going to do it for this mailbag type episode. Hopefully I answered all your questions. If you have more, feel free to put them down low in the comment section. That's going to do it for this episode. I'll be back in a couple of days to preview the NBA draft. Thanks for listening. Go Wiz.